You're listening to a real piece of work. I probably shouldn't say it that way. You're listening to A Real Piece of Work, a jobs podcast for aspiring professionals brought to you by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, and Junior Achievement of the Heartland. Now here's your hosts.
Welcome back to A Real Piece of Work. I'm Matt Rebro, here with your co-host, Matt Blaylock, two dads, just trying to figure it out, especially when it comes to work, family, and helping young people think about their futures. Really want to thank our friends at Illawah for helping bring this episode and our entire podcast alive.
Matt, we're joined today by somebody who's a great example of balancing the career, the community, family. Our guest started out like a lot of students might, mowing lawns for a little extra cash. Mm-hmm. But instead of stopping there, he built that hustle into Valley Outdoor, a company that now serves more than like 350 accounts. That seems daunting. It has about 25 employees in the Quad Cities.
And he's also a fourth-generation Bettner firefighter. Thank you very much. A proud dad. And someone who really embodies giving back to the community. Austin Blanc, welcome to A Real Piece of Work.
Thanks for having me.
So, Austin, many in our audience may mow a lawn for a few extra bucks while in school. Tell us about when you decided to take it to the next level and knew this was what you wanted to do.
Oh, man. So it started back in... when I was at Scott Community College, I was just going to get my gen eds out of the way and kind of half a day classes, you know, lived at home, got out of there and just needed work. And that's kind of just started with a couple accounts and kind of snowballed off of that. Transferred up to Iowa State originally for ag business, studying that because we farmed a little bit and I thought that was the way I was going to go. So went up there for a semester and then continued to run my business. Had a guy back here mowing lawns throughout the week. And then I'd come back on the weekends and we'd do some side jobs, just like mulching and cleanups and kind of softscape stuff. Sure. And then it just did that for about a year and a half, 2 years. And it was just so tough because I had good college experience, but I missed out on a lot of college experience. But it's you gotta kind of become an adult and join the workforce. And I made the tough decision to drop out of college, and I had a good sized contract that was kind of coming down the pipeline. I had an opportunity to bid on it and got it, and dropped out of college that semester and. Yeah, I kind of never looked back after that. I love school. I had a great time. After that first semester, switching from ag business to landscape design, you learn so much. I remember we did so many. We'd go and visit a lot of landscape companies up in the Des Moines area, Ames area, and you just get a total different taste of. How they run and what they do, and a totally different market. So I kind of saw how everything was going up there, and I really wanted to bring a lot of that back to the Quad Cities because I thought in some areas it was lacking. And just every year, just kind of slowly growing. I was always just kind of success in silence. Didn't really advertise a whole lot. Didn't really market a whole lot, besides just putting logos on some trucks, doing some branding stuff, but that's pretty much it.
So Valley now serves over 350 accounts weekly and employs 25 people. What were some of the turning points where you realized this just wasn't like a side hustle, but a company that could really support others?
I mean, it's so like 2015, 2016, when I hired on my first landscape crew, it was two guys, and, you know, that was their career. Mm-hmm. And it was something to where I had to kind of, you know, really grow up pretty at a young age. And because they, you know, they rely on that, their families rely on that. And it definitely changed my frame of thinking about, you know, being in your 20s and, you know, hanging out and partying and whatnot. It wasn't, I mean, we still had fun, don't get me wrong, but it was, you can't just take a Monday off being right. sick, and payroll comes on Friday. So, harbored a lot of great relationships right off the bat and, with employees and customers, and had a really good customer base. And, a lot of them we still do work for this day. And some of those same employees are still working for us, you know, going on 10 plus years. So it's pretty cool. I mean, they're not employees, they're my friends. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, I care about everything that's going on in their life and what they do and how they do it. And, I want them to be better people and grow and, you know, do well too, you know.
Love it.
So Austin, you mentioned being at Scott as well as Iowa State. Mm-hmm. You talked about leaving Iowa State ultimately. What was that decision process like, and what did you learn in your experience while you were in school?
I learned a lot. I mean, it was really nice going to Scott and getting those gen eds knocked out, you know, your basic classes. It saved a ton of money. That's the way to go. My parents, I don't know how far you want me to go into this, but my parents were divorced. But so I was, the way it was set up was mom pays for a third, dad pays for a third, and I pay for a third. Hmm. So if I could save, you know, a ton of money by getting these gen eds knocked out for an eighth of the price compared to a state school, I did it. And I did that for a year and a half, and then got my GPA up also too, and got accepted, transferred to Iowa State, got accepted, and really just, I don't know, got a ton of knowledge from all of that. I mean, you learn a lot. I mean, you miss out on that first 2 years. I will say you do miss out on that first 2 years of the college experience, you know, the freshman, sophomore kind of year, you know, living in the dorms and stuff like that. But I mean, you just got to kind of bite your lip and just I'll roll with it, I guess, so to speak.
Love it. No, it makes a lot of sense, and I think we're seeing a trend of a lot of students these days that are looking at the lower cost option and just making sure they're, before they go off and possibly look for that four-year degree, that, hey, is this where I should be going? And so love that community college route. So running a landscape and snow removal business sounds somewhat straightforward, you know, mowers, shovels, plows. But behind the scenes, there's got to be a lot of other stuff that you guys have to juggle. What parts of the running the business maybe have surprised you the most and our listeners may be curious about?
I mean, there's always a lot of equipment. Equipment is the, I'd say, behind labor, it's our number two expense on everything. And snow removal equipment is so expensive, especially, you know, after COVID. I mean, it was pricey before, but now it's even higher, especially with, you know, even just zero turns. I mean, we used to be able to get...
What's a zero turn for our listeners?
I used to be able to get my model a zero turn out the door with all the options on it for under $10,000. Now it's $15,000, and that's 3 years later. And it's the same model, same engine, same everything. They have no design changes or updates or anything. So it's a tough pill to swallow. You, that's where it really comes into warranty, having a good relationship with your dealer, and any vendor, really. Really value a lot of our vendors. I mean, they keep us going. And they do everything they can. They value my business and I value everything they do for us, but it's tough. I mean, it's really hard to get a quote from a dealer, whatever the piece of equipment is, and not be like, man, should I get another quote, or is this just what stuff is, or is this just, you know? But I'm also like, I'm pretty loyal to them, man. I just, cause they've been loyal to me, you know. Yeah. I look at it as like, not on the overall cost of things, when you buy a unit, but also like, I want the service. My biggest thing is, you know, around this area, everybody's like, oh, you just use John Deere because, you know, they're in the area. And I'm like, well, we also do work for a lot of John Deere employees, and I think they value that. And also like, yeah, they're a little bit more comparatively, but it's all in the same ballpark for the most part. But my biggest thing is the service and parts. So I can get anything pretty quickly within a day if I need to, you know, drop ship it or whatever I need to do, or run over to Milan to get some parts. I mean, it's been done. I can do it. And a lot of the other equipment manufacturers that we've dealt with, man, it's 3-4 days, might be something, and that's...
So what does that mean when you're down for 3 to 4 days?
You got to have backups. You got to have backup equipment. You got to potentially have a dealer that has loaners, which a lot of them didn't in COVID. It was tough to do that, but it's, you just kind of have to have that backup, you know, whatever it's material or equipment or whatever have you, what, down to snowblowers. I mean, you just, if we have 10 of them out there, I have to have at least 3 or 4 of them as a backup. So it's just with zero turns too. Skid loaders, we have always have one extra or sitting at the shop, or at least a dealer that I could potentially lean on to say, hey, what's a rental price for a month if we, something happens, you know. You just gotta, every asset of whatever service that you're doing, I always try to make sure we're well prepared, not only with employees but with the equipment side of things, because it's, when it goes down, you gotta be able to get somebody else on there, or sure, get something going.
So when you started the business, mm-hmm, right, like there is a certain amount of, like, you have to get clients, you, mm-hmm, got to sell. And, you know, I know as well, when you go out on your own, it's hard in the beginning. Tell me about some of those first clients and how that went, or maybe the large client that you got when you were still in school that was part of that decision, mm-hmm, to come back and do it. What's that like, acquiring accounts?
Oh, it can be stressful at times. I think people took a chance on me, but they saw kind of my potential, and they saw how much I cared and just my consistency and just the, you know, what I said what I was going to do. You know, I wasn't late on it, or I wasn't, you know, I fulfilled what they wanted. And I think getting clients is something that it takes time. I mean, it's not something where you just go out and you boost a Facebook post and you automatically get them. It's tough, but I think if you, my biggest thing, what I always wanted to do was just grow slow. And then next thing you know, you're, you know, a decent sized player in the market, and it takes time. But I've also seen guys, you know, companies that have come in and shot up within a year or two, and then all of a sudden they're lose a couple key guys, or, you know, issues or whatever it is, and then they're gone. And it's, I think people value a consistent service that's there year after year after year. The biggest thing is you just got to make yourself available to these customers when they reach out, whether it's getting back to an email, you know, within a timely manner, or a text or a call. I mean, and they come all hours of the night. That's one thing I didn't really know too much about. I didn't really realize people would be that. And they come after you every, you know, emails middle of night, but it's just, I got used to it. It used to really bother me because I'm like, man, this is Sunday night at 4 PM. Someone's trying to call me for this. And it's just like, but you also got to put yourself in their shoes and be like, well, maybe that's when they get off work and they're thinking about it. You know, it's not the same frame that I'm thinking, like, oh, it's Sunday night, you know, just hanging out with the family, you know, chilling, watching football. It's maybe their wife works all week and then they have to work that day. You know, if you put yourself in their shoes, I think it kind of, you know, different way of looking at things, makes you more relatable to them, and I think they respect that. Because I mean, it's my 13th year doing this, and I've seen a lot of people that are like, man, I've tried to call this company and this company and this company, and it's like only 2 of them got back to me, and this guy didn't even give me a quote. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know what what you want me to say. I mean, it's just like it's just how it is. It's just sometimes people are like that, or they promise too much and they can't do it. And I have no problem declining quotes. I mean, or declining opportunities. If I don't feel 100% comfortable that myself or my team can handle it, I mean, I got to trust my gut. Yeah. You know, don't get too ahead of yourself where you're, you know, spread too thin, where you got to go out and buy all this equipment and get all these employees and, you know, do all that stuff too quickly, because it'll catch up to you pretty quick, you know, if you don't have that stuff locked in. And that's why I think growing slowly is the right way to do things. And it also helps out on the book end of things going into the business side. You know, you got to have a good accountant, you got to have a good insurance guy, and you know, and just back end financial team. That was probably the biggest learning curve that I had. First couple of years, I didn't really know where anything was at. As long as we had money in the bank at the end of the year, I knew. But then I've been on both sides, because basically with this, the way the, you know, economy is set up is that it's, you have to spend money. I mean, businesses have to spend money, unless, or you're just going to pay it in the back end with taxes, essentially, and income tax. And just, I've been on both ends of the scales where you're paying a lot, or you're financing equipment and you get a credit, you know. So it's just learning that way. I wish there was more education on that. That's always been the biggest thing, is just sales tax and insurance side of things and all that. It's a tough road.
Has there been somebody that has helped you in that regard, in terms of just getting a little wiser about the insurance, the financial side of getting wise about your business?
Yeah. Do you want me to mention the business?
Sure.
So Total Solutions, they're a local company, locally owned. They do like accounting, back end financial stuff, payroll. They're really good with that side of things. And when I first started, there was no companies out there for that. There was just like your tax accountant, that was it. Yeah. And now there's a number of them in the area, and they've helped me out to where I have, you know, monthly, you know, P&L statements and income and all this other sort. I really don't even like to look at it too much because I don't like to get into the weeds with it, but it,
pun intended.
Sorry. It was a dad joke just waiting.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
There.
But they've been very helpful with a lot of that, and they really get you on the right path with it. I think I connected with them 3 or 4 years ago, where I was really apprehensive at first, because you're always, as a business owner, you're always like kind of worried, I guess, to send all your numbers to somebody else. And,
sure.
You know, because they're dissecting it and going through and making sure everything's into the correct category and whatnot. But once I did that, it was just like a weight lifted off my shoulders, and tax time was so much easier.
So for our listeners, essentially you're outsourcing, you're hiring a company instead of to help with the books and some of the policies, I'm guessing, instead of having somebody on your payroll as a full-time employee to address these topics.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a business owner, I mean, you have to be resourceful. I mean, you can't, I think in today's day and age, it's so easy, especially with technology. I mean, you have to be resourceful and you have to know what just employees cost throughout the year. And that's not even including making sure they can do everything correctly for that side of things on a financial end, and just being resourceful and trusting them, you know, it's a big step, but it's definitely paid off, I feel like.
So that's been a positive step that's helped you. Can you share with the listeners maybe an example, like, man, that was a setback, and how you recovered from that, maybe what you learned from that?
I could go into so many different ways on this.
It's not all sunshine and rainbows. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I always like to say, one of my dad's old farmer friends, he used to always say to me, you know, when somebody would make a mistake and it end up costing them or something, you know, they'd break something on the farm and it would cost them a lot to get it repaired. He said, education don't come cheap. Mm. And, it just always stuck with me because I'm like, I've had those and I've even done it to some of my, I shouldn't say I've done it to them, but I've put them in situations where like employees or crew leaders or project managers where I'm like, they make a mistake and I'm like, did you learn from your mistake? Cause education, it doesn't come cheap, man. It's one thing. And I always tell them, I'm like, that's how you learn. I go, that's how I learn. I go, you know, we're not all perfect. We make mistakes and, there's so many ways that we have made mistakes. And I said, as long as we're learning from them, you know, and I'm very upfront. I mean, when somebody on the mowing side, when there's a complaint, a customer sends me, you know, 15 pictures of their yard when they were mowing, when it was too wet or whatever have you, or they sprayed somebody's tomato plants, man, I've dealt with it all. And it's just like, hey, like, can we just, I'm upfront, I'm transparent. I'm like, I'm just letting you know. I kind of play it as like, hey, I'm just the middleman. I'm just telling you, we're service. They're expecting a superior service. You know, we just need to do better. I mean, we have a standard to withhold, and it's just, I always tell the guys too. I'm like, mowing side in particular. I'm like, we have a target on our back, and because people see us out there, they see our trucks, our equipment, our guys are all, you know, uniformed, and they're wanting to get to that. And it's, I tell the guys, I'm like, we need to up our standard more. I mean, I'm very hard on them, but I mean, in a good way. Yeah. It's just, but cause if you take your foot off the pedal, I feel like it's, that's when stuff starts to slide. And I can't sleep at night if that happens. So
tell us about the firefighting piece of your of what you do. I mean, it's hard to imagine you've got a lot of time running a business the size you do, but tell me about that and tell me what you like about it. Tell me what you learned.
Yeah. So I'm a fourth generation firefighter. My, you know, great grandpa, my grandpa, my dad, and I had a lot of cousins in the Bettendorf Pleasant Valley fire department. And I was on for a little under 10 years. I started right when I got out of high school on the fire department in Bettendorf. And that's where I feel like I got a lot of my structure and just how to assess problems. And you have to be on your feet with that stuff. I mean, very quickly, you gotta, you know, just when you assess a scene, whether it's an EMS call or a structure fire, you know, what you're doing, what your next step is, who's backing you up. I mean, you have to think about all those things and that fire department stuff, the training that you have to do, it drills it in India. I mean, you do trainings every Monday night on Bettendorf Fire for 9, 10 years. It just got to the point where it was tough for me to like leave my business throughout the day, because you're on call essentially 24 hours a day, you know, every day. So it's you know, when your pager goes off or whatever, you have to drop everything you're doing and leave. And it was tough for me to give it a full effort. And it was just, and then I started having a family and it got even busier. So it just, cause I wanted to spend time with them, and it was tough to go out on those fire calls. Cause you could be on a fire call, like if it was a fully engulfed structure fire, you know, it'd be anywhere from 2 to 4 hours on, I mean, you just didn't know. I mean, and it could be at 7 o'clock at night or it could be at 2 in the morning. So it just, I learned a lot. Cause they're, you know, every fire department has a lot of, you know, structure and policies, and you have to follow them. Otherwise, you know, people's lives get lost. So it's just, that really drilled a lot of things, principles into me. And I took that and kind of ran with it. But it was a really cool experience, and volunteering was really cool. You had to be, you know, you were involved in a lot of different things. And Bettendorf has a different kind of a department. So they're called a combination department where they have volunteers and career staff, basically full-time, you know, firefighters and then the volunteer staff. So got a, met a ton of great people and, you know, just great training and also had a lot of training experience. You could go anywhere that you really wanted to. It was just tough to designate the time to do that. But
so it sounded like, again, the marriage, parenthood started pulled some time. Got to pick and choose where you're going to put it.
Yeah.
Your family has roots back to the 1800s here in the Quad Cities, which is amazing. How has that heritage shaped your outlook on building and keeping a business here in the Quad Cities, especially as a parent now and your kids watching you run a business?
Yeah, I guess that was the biggest chip on my my shoulder when I dropped out of college, because I had kind of like a heritage of, you know, family around the area. So I didn't want to like let them down or like or fall on my face or, you know, end up working for so-and-so down the road or whatever. I didn't want to do that. I felt like I was a better person than that. And I wanted to kind of prove them wrong. I mean, cause I caught a lot of flack for dropping out. I mean, not only from my, family members, but, you know, friends and just, I mean, it was tough. I mean, you go to like, you know, Thanksgivings and Christmas. Oh, what are you doing now? Well, I'm starting this. And they're like, okay. Like, they're just, it was, you could just kind of see it on them. Sure. And it bothered me. And, you know, but running a business around an area where your family's been at forever, it's, you go out and you meet a lot of people that, oh, I know your grandma or I know your grandpa or whatever. But it's also like, I'm rooted here. Like, I'm not leaving, you know, you can't leave. I can't just leave and go to move everything to Denver and expect to just copy and paste and move and expect, you just can't, because, and I don't want to do that to my customers. I truly, they've done so much for me and my guys throughout the course of the years. I feel horrible doing that. So you're definitely rooted in the community and, yeah.
Love it.
So maybe a little different question. I mean, with 350 accounts and 25 employees and a bunch of mowers, do you actually have to cut your own grass at home?
Yeah, I love cutting my own grass. I love it. It's kind of like Zen for me. I don't know. It's put my phone on silent and yeah, I do really enjoy it. I mean, I always tell the guys I'd be out there doing this, but like whenever I'm out there, I just get blown up. Like, it's voicemails. I mean, text. I mean, and it's text you have to like immediately respond to. So it's tough to do that. I love doing it. It's not something, you know, but I think that's also like cool. I think the guys respect that because I'm transparent. I'm level with them. I'm not like, oh, I'm too good, you know, I'm not going to cut my own grass. I mean, it's just, I don't have that character to do that. And I mean, yeah, there's definitely some times where I'm like, I'm busy and they're going to be off early on a Friday. I'll be like, hey, swing by my house and hit it on the way home. And yeah, you know, but it's definitely nice to have that, but it's crazy because some of the, you know, guys similar in age to you guys, they, with kids and sports and stuff, it's a lot of dads love cutting their grass and, they get a hold of me and like, we'll mow their grass when their kids are in like, you know, baseball or basketball or whatever. But, you know, from spring to about July-ish to whenever that ends. And just because it's just so much on their plate. Cause I mean, with baseball and those schedulings and stuff, I mean, you're going, you know, Milwaukee 1 week, you know, Chicago, I mean, St. Louis, I mean, you're going all over. The people who do that traveling baseball stuff. It's, and I feel for them and I'm like, man, it's like such a bittersweet moment because you can tell they just don't want to give it up. But we'll mow it for a couple months and then we'll take it back over. But
That's a target-rich environment right there.
Rebro didn't know there was a downtime with travel sports, so he's going to take him a minute to process that. Wait a second. This slows down.
I love it. So you built a career that mixes physical work, business smarts, and community service. How do you define success for yourself at this stage of life?
I'd say just a lot of my mindset has changed after having kids. I used to be so worried about what other companies are doing or what equipment they have or who they hired or what jobs they're doing. And ever since kids, I'm just like, I just focus on myself and my family. I'm just trying to support and give them a good life and make it sure I'm a respectable name and business. And, it was a tough thing. You know, I used to be so worried about that stuff, and it, after getting married and having kids, I don't care. I tell my project manager a lot. I'm just like, man, he'll tell me, oh, so-and-so did this or so-and-so is doing this or whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, it doesn't bother me. It's not that I don't care. It's just like, if it doesn't directly affect me or my guys and work, I'm just like, it's out of sight, out of mind, in my opinion. That's all I really value. It's tough to definitely step away from the business, when you are go out of town or whatever, but man, I feel like that's any entrepreneur. And you can't just shut your phone off, and nor have I ever, but it definitely takes a toll on you, but just, it's a good stress to have, I guess. I mean, it could be the other way where nobody's trying to get a hold of you and you have no work, but
it is. Exactly.
But yeah.
So, Austin talks about the family and the balance. I just have a question, like, real quick, what's the one thing you hope your kids learn from seeing you run this business?
I hope they appreciate all the hard work, the dedication, and I hope they understand it. My dad was a farmer, an entrepreneur too, and I didn't really truly understand it until I was in college, just how much back-end work that it really takes up. I just hope they value that. I mean, coming from a divorced family with my parents and stuff, it was tough, you know. I hope a lot of people just understand it and don't think that they're better than that, or they're do the poor me card. I mean, believe me, it's tough to keep a positive attitude every single day, but you just got to rise above it, I guess, and keep your head down and keep pushing, because there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It's not all doom and gloom, but I just hope they have a lot of those character traits, and they respect what and my wife. I mean, she has a great career too, and she works her tail off, and she loves what she does. And I want them to know that this didn't come easy. Yeah. You know, a lot of people always ask me, you know, well, did you buy this company, or now your dad started this, right? And I'm like, no, fucking dad. He mows his grass about an inch short. I mean like to an inch. My dad has no idea. He can fix about anything, but he waxes grass. I call it like the old farmer mentality, where they just whack it so low, and it's just like, well, I don't have to mow it for, you know, 5 more days. So it's like, it's so funny, but, I hope they understand it. And I think it's cool to document this stuff along the way. And because I really didn't have a lot of documentation the first couple of years of doing this stuff.
So, every time we do one of these, we try to wrap it up with, you know, looking at 16-year-old Austin, and what would you say, you know, stop doing, start doing, and keep doing to help set yourself up for future success and happiness? So stop doing, start doing, keep doing.
Start doing, would say investing. Whether that's education-wise or financial-wise, you invest early, you are light years ahead of a lot of other people. Stop doing. When I was 16, speeding.
Well, just leave it at that.
That's a great message.
Just...
That's a great message to the community right there, Rebro.
Yeah, in our neighborhood especially.
Hold okay. on, kids.
Stop doing. I mean, I was always so worried about what was going to college for. You know, it's pushed down every kid's, high school kid's throat. You need to go to this school. You need to go to this school, or whether that's the parents' ambition or the kids' ambition, like, or the school's ambition. Just do what you want to do. And if you need to take a break and go to a community college or work in the trades or whatever, I mean, there's so many opportunities out there. And I feel like so many kids, friends my age, they stressed so much about that. And these, I know guys that went to school for, you know, accounting, and they're working in the trades. You know, it's just like it's all over the board with it. And just stop stressing so much about that and just kind of living in the moment, because those are some of the best years of your life, yeah. In my opinion.
Absolutely. Well, Austin Blunk, you are a real piece of work. We really appreciate you being a part of the program here today. And thanks to our partners over at Illawa for helping to make this come to reality and supporting all those kids at Junior Achievement of the Heartland.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Another great episode. Austin Blunk. And by the way, how cool. 2025 Junior Achievement of the Heartland, Young Entrepreneur of the Year. So it was really neat to bring full circle, bring him into the mix here and learn a little about his story and his why. I'm going to kind of keep it pretty simple. The one thing that I heard from him that really stood out to me is he clearly gives himself and his team permission to make mistakes. And kids, listeners, any listener out there, being in a culture, being in an organization, being led by somebody that allows you to make some mistakes and learn from it, phenomenal. That's all I got to say about that is phenomenal.
Well, I mean, I think it's easy to see why he was chosen for that award.
Yeah.
The thing that stands out to me about the conversation with Austin today is hard decisions. Mm. You know, he talked about making the hard decisions to go towards the business and away from college. He talked about balancing the family and the volunteer firefighting, and ultimately, you know, having to kind of to put that to the side based upon life changing. So I think it's just great to have somebody so open about their personal life, their business life, and the fact that he had to make some hard decisions along the way.
100%, buddy. Well, it's been another great episode. Looking forward to future runs with you. And again, appreciate Austin for joining us today, our friends at Junior Achievement, and certainly Illawa for supporting this episode and beyond.